Hey, Mike. Hey. I hear there's this sporting event happening in Florida Sunday that everyone seems to go crazy about.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
This is, yes, super something, super...
plate?
Bowl?
Bowl. Yes, that's right. Yep.
What's this all about?
It's where we put all of our masculinity and fears together and we put them on a field. It's amazing. You're going to love it.
Well, that sounds intriguing. When is it kicking off Pacific time?
Oh, man, you can't ask me tactical details like that. Usually the way I figure it out is one of my friends who are cool, they hold a party, and then that's when I figure out when the Super Bowl is.
Okay. Well, I'm assuming no Super Bowl party this Sunday, or at least not a big one.
No, I think we got a Zoom one going.
This is the Americanist podcast. My name is Johannes Ehrmann. I'm a journalist and writer in Berlin, Germany, and I'm joined by my dear friend and accomplished scholar in Stanford, California, Mike Baiocchi. Welcome, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah, we're all getting hyped up. Super Bowl Sunday, only a few hours away. American media getting pretty hyped up. I'm just going to read you one tiny little quote here from an article on The Ringer. Tom Brady, the NFL's titan, is going against Patrick Mahomes, the young challenger who throws lightning. This Super Bowl matchup is beyond legendary. It is mythical.
Oh, that's so good.
So how excited are you a few days?
I think it'll be fun if I'm aware of it. So we're just going to disclose this early. I barely understand sports. I have a lot of fun, but I'm a little naive.
Yeah, that's one part of your personality that I'm still struggling to understand, because you like to do sports.
That's right.
Right? So yeah. You lift weight. You even have like a gym in your garage, I believe.
That's right.
Yes. You do cycling. You used to do shot put in high school. That's right. I remember that.
And college. Yeah.
And college. Yeah. And you were a catcher in Little League.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing you remember that.
I wasn't there, but I still can't forget it. So you just don't care about sports on TV so much? Or?
Yeah, if my friends are playing sports, I'll go watch and enjoy. A number of my students through the past few years have been just extraordinary athletes, so I'll go see them. But if there's not someone on the field who, I care about, it's very hard for me to... Yeah, I would probably have more fun going to your daughter's track and field.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. She's running the right way. Yay! That's the correct direction.
I'm not going to lie. I would probably have more fun if you're going to be there as well.
One last, some of my very favorite sports times have, like, when you and I went around Germany checking out football
some
games.
Some soccer grounds. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. You were in some of the greatest stadiums. Hamburg, Kaiserslautern. Good old days. But we're not here to talk about soccer. This is the Americanist, not the Europeanist. And so Brady versus Mahomes, right? Big mythical matchup. And Tom Brady, of course, now in Trump's home in Florida with the Buccaneers. Yeah. But spent most of his not-so-short career up in New England, where you come from.
That's right.
Extended New England in Maine.
Hegemonic influence.
Yeah, so what do you think about this guy?
So he shows up a lot outside of sports. Has fairly distinct political views and shows up in movies and that kind of stuff. So he's a real pop icon.
Mm.
But oh my gosh, I mean, he took there's a long chunk of NFL football history that is completely built around him.
Yeah. So he can win his seventh Super Bowl on Sunday. Yeah. Of course, Mahomes is sort of like a new generation of quarterbacks. And you already mentioned the masculinity aspect of the sport. Quarterback position very much built around white strongmen, decidedly. So maybe just a little stat here. 70% of NFL athletes in total are black by now, but almost 70% of NFL quarterbacks are still white.
Wow. Yeah.
So big discrepancy here. Is this something that is also discussed sort of in your circles? Is it in the media there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, amongst my friends, like, people have been talking about it, you know, past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, but there's also been, like, linguistic analysis of how, mm-hmm. like, sports commentators have historically talked about, like, mm-hmm. Quarterbacks and other players. Like, there's a lot more physicality discussions mm-hmm. and descriptors of Black athletes, you know, on the excuse me, on the front lines and that kind of stuff, where there's a lot mm-hmm. of like indications of like intelligence and leadership and that those mm-hmm. kinds of things with a quarterback. And mm-hmm. yeah, sure, maybe you have to be mildly aware, situationally aware in a different way if you're a mm-hmm. quarterback and you call some of the mm-hmm. plays or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the distinctions are fairly mm-hmm. minute given how radically different people talk yeah. about it. But yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, I mean, let's just say, like, putting a white guy in charge of a bunch of non-white folks. Like, it, yeah.
And a lot of it also seems to have to do with the fact that the NFL power structure is very much white as well. Yeah. General managers tend to be white. Yeah. Team owners are almost exclusively white. That's a really good point. Very wealthy businessmen. I mean, and those are the guys that take the decisions, right?
Yeah, and contrast that with the NBA. Mm-hmm. which has a very different power structure, and the athletes there are much more rewarded for speaking or defended for speaking out and speaking their minds, whereas the NFL is much more locked down of its athletes.
Mm-hmm. So there's an interesting shift going on, though. The number of Black starting quarterbacks has actually doubled, I think, from last year to this year. Yeah. It has only doubled, I think, from 5 to 10 spots out of 32. So that's why we're still at a low percentage here. But a few of the very spectacular young athletes are minority athletes. Mm. So Patrick Mahomes is the reigning Super Bowl MVP. Lamar Jackson was the regular season MVP last year. And then Brady, 43 years old. Apparently, he still has something to prove.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's 1-6. There's a question, you know, if anyone will ever win 6. Maybe yeah. Mahomes will, because he's only 25 at this point. So he might have a shot. Yeah. But I've heard it said, so if Mahomes doesn't win Sunday, then he will never be the GOAT. We should maybe explain this. GOAT is greatest of all time.
That's right. Yes. Sorry.
Sports acronym.
Yeah, I just love it. I mean, it just gets super hyped up. And this is one of the, like, it's totally okay. Everybody agrees. You just could be ridiculous with your descriptors during the Super Bowl. Everything matters 100 times more than it really does. Yeah.
Yeah, everything matters. And before we dive more into this paradigm shift that's going on there in the NFL, we have to talk, of course, about what is even more important, the ads and the halftime show. Yeah. Right. So obviously the ads we can't already talk about. Maybe we'll talk about in the next episode. What yeah. were your favorite ones?
Sure.
Halftime show. I looked up The Weeknd. At first I thought there was a vowel missing there. The Weeknd. Clearly my own personal OK Boomer moment. I had absolutely no idea who they were. Then I listened to their song, Blinding Lights, which has, I don't know, 3 trillion streams on Spotify or so. And actually pretty cool, because it sounded a lot like my childhood. It sounded a lot like the 80s.
Ah.
So yeah, it's a modern song that sounds like 1983.
So they're sampling us now? We're so old that
yeah.
they can reach back?
Yeah. So I'm feeling pretty old, but it sounded vaguely familiar, but I'm not sure if it sounded familiar because I listened to it unintentionally right. in the last year, or because it just triggered so much of my childhood music in me. But yeah, pretty big event, close to $450 million in ad revenue.
Yeah.
So this has tripled in 15 years. So the NFL is clearly doing pretty well with the Super Bowl.
Just to mention that, I mean, like, this is like one of those opportunities where everybody really is going to be looking at a TV at the same time, and
yeah.
you know, for a media ad buy, like, it used to be very important, and now it's extraordinarily important. Getting mm-hmm. ads in front of people is, you know, a very tough challenge, and so yes, it is an intrinsic part of the Super Bowl that the commercial ad placement capitalism is like right there in the right in the center stage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it is one of the, in a very sort of divided country that we've talked about
yeah.
at length in our earlier episodes. Is this sort of one of the last spectacles that everyone can agree on?
Yeah, Yeah, I would say like some of our sports are really separated. So I think like some of the racing, like NASCAR, tends to be, you know, more Republican. And I guess maybe the NBA has started to move to be more sort of Democrat, something like that. You know, this event definitely is cross-cultural here in the US.
We've watched one Super Bowl together, and I hinted at it last time. The Chicago Bears played the Indianapolis Colts, or the other guys, as you like to call them. So, yeah, so and Peyton Manning at the time was the quarterback for the Colts, so another one of these like larger-than-life quarterback figures. How was it like growing up and you know, in high school? I know there's a huge emphasis on sports where you are. And, you know, we see it in movies and series, like this, you know, quarterback figure.
Yeah.
Even in high school, he seems to be like the guy who everyone is like revering.
The cool kid, yeah.
Yeah. Was it like that for you growing up in the high school as well? Or?
Well, we did not have football. So my school... Yeah. So football is a very expensive sport played by people who tend to not have a lot of resources. So this is a very sort of interesting phenomenon. It requires a lot of people on the field, and it chews through people fairly quickly. It's a very taxing, like, you know, lower back, knees get blown out pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. People end up with concussions. There's also a lot of material investment, so helmets, pads, that kind of stuff. And then you can imagine, like, insurance is also really high. So it does. So my school didn't have it. We played soccer.
Okay, cool.
And so yes, our soccer captain was the cool kid.
So he was the equivalent of the quarterback.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And but other places. So other larger towns in Maine would have it. And yes, that dynamic definitely played out. But this is a regionally varying. So if you're in like Texas or Oklahoma in the United States, that it is a huge social construct, and it's a huge, the town itself builds around it. You like there are like fields that are like a couple million dollars for these high school players, which look like just like professional fields.
And would you go then to these towns and hang out at the you know, Friday night games there at the high schools? And
I think we actually did. I do have like memories of going up to Lewiston. Auburn is a big city, it's an adorable little city, but it's one of our biggest ones. So I do remember going up to
for Maine standards.
By Maine standards, it was the big city.
Oh, cool. In contrast to German high schools, where this competition aspect in sports is not really so pronounced, we then rather go to like sports clubs in the afternoon. They're not associated with the high schools. But I remember you telling me that there was like this competitive spirit, and even like putting individual students up against each other in sort of like a weird positive competitive spirit.
Yeah, no, that so it operates at a couple different levels. So our towns would have different rivalries with other towns, and you know maybe play a season of, you know, 15 games, and five of them are peak competition because you're going against your rivals or something like that. Even to some degree, bigger than going through the finals or something like that. A lot of people would show up, you know, to the games that were against our rivals. And then, yeah, I mean, there's encouraged rivalries within the teams in the school. And I wouldn't, you know, like TV definitely turns the drama way up. I do sort of think of them as being rather healthy, you know, levels in practice. I can imagine maybe some towns, you know, had it differently. You know, it's the kind of thing where like you're trying for the same position, or you're, you know, and it just encourages you to go the extra mile, like, you know, in your training and that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of competitiveness.
And coaches would sort of put you in these positions intentionally to compete for certain things with, for example, one other person.
Yeah, I mean, like usually in my town. You know, it'd be like an open call for the position. You know, it'd be like, you know, we're trying to figure out who's going to be pitching this game, or who's going to be, you know, who's going to be in this batting position or something like that. And yeah, you know, so it would be known that that spot was up for someone to take over.
I'm also asking this because I'm trying to understand the mindset of Brady.
Yeah.
Because I mean, and I've covered sports here. I used to be a sports writer, so I think I know a little bit, or I try to imagine how athletes function.
Yeah.
But I'm really, and we've seen it with a lot of athletes that they just go on and they just sort of forget to stop. And I mean, and he's clearly still somehow at a peak because he reached the Super Bowl again. And of course, he didn't do that alone. I mean, one should also maybe mention that he threw three interceptions in the semifinals. So people were like, "Yeah, Brady put them on his back and took them to the Super Bowl." That's not exactly. That's I guess part of this hyper reverence that you pay to this position and this mythical figure of the quarterback. It's almost more than a real figure; it's a mythical figure. But can you explain to me the American in Tom Brady?
You know, so he's getting to the point where the narrative may flip. And some of the stuff that you invoked earlier, I'll talk about in a minute, but there is especially now, maybe because we have the boomer generation, which feels like it's being sort of ushered off the stage of power of politics and that kind of stuff. I think, Brady resonates a lot with a lot of people because he is continuing to be at the top of his game and he's continuing to be, his presence felt and to hold on longer and demonstrate that you are, able to keep going. Like, it's just a really important part of our story that we just never give up. But there's also, in the way you framed it, in the way it sounded like from what you were reading, we have a really strong underdog narrative in our sports as well. So setting up these two tropes, these two common stories, narratives, are sort of at war in this Super Bowl.
And in this instance, it's not even entirely clear who is the underdog because the reigning champion is the young guy, is Mahomes.
Yeah.
And Brady is sort of like this old cowboy who's trying to win his last duel or something. I don't know.
I mean, I guess the way you've said it there, it sounds a lot like sort of the Old West kind of narratives that we have, where the old gunslinger is coming out of retirement to make sure the town is safe again. You know, we do have those kinds of tropes.
And what do you make of all of it? I mean, go into it with any kind of preference? Do you just may the better win?
Me going into it is like figuring out how to cheer at the right times and not embarrass my friends in front of other people. There's also like, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but there's also like food culture around the event too. Like there's like people will break out different like bean dips and that kind of stuff. So there's lots of like other aspects to culturally participate in that, like people like me find a way in. Maybe I send out like my bean dip recipe to everybody so we can all have it at the same time. But that's, personally, I don't like Tom Brady, even though he like really helped the Patriots, which is like sort of nominally my team. The dude has just been like in the political sphere and shouting down other people. So no, I mean, like, if he does not have joy that day, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, because it seems after 4 years of Trump, or even more years of division in America, there's not really much that is really still apolitical. And the quarterback position certainly has been hyper-politicized by Trump himself, because there was Colin Kaepernick, a black quarterback who lost his job because he was protesting for equality. And he used the U.S. anthem to do it, to kneel down. Trump, of course, basically shot him down told NFL owners, okay, if you're going to employ this guy, I'm coming after you.
Yeah.
So he used his power as the most powerful white man in America at the time to marginalize a black athlete. Tom Brady was sort of, quite obviously throwing Kaepernick also under the bus at the time. So I pulled out this quote. He was asked, Kaepernick was looking for a job. This was fall 2017. He was asked if he had paid much attention to Kaepernick's situation. And he sort of was evasive, saying, "Not much, not much, not this time of year. My attention goes in a lot of places, so not much." And then he added, "I don't know Colin very well at all. I've never really had a conversation with him." So pretty obviously. I mean, he could have used his power there to make a statement.
Right.
Consciously chose not to.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the stuff that you were alluding at as well? Or?
Yeah, that's exactly. And he's even gone sort of like further trying to keep people, quote unquote, in their lane. Like when other people have started to speak out. There were other athletes in the NFL and outside of the NFL that stepped up to try to defend Kaepernick. And then part of the story is like, this is a really quite excellent athlete, like, and he just never got picked up by any other team after he lost his spot and has just sort of like, you know, been on the sidelines. So essentially either an explicit or, you know, implicit like boycott of this guy. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a side analysis, but I'll circle it back to Brady in just a second. I've always wondered if part of the trouble, there are sort of two things going on with the NFL, and I'll contrast it with the NBA. One is there's this, like, in order to participate in the long run in the NFL, you are risking your body. You are, like, so I've done research. We got a paper out that was investigating head trauma and the long-lasting implications of participating in football. And, like, there was a guy when you and I were at Penn, or I guess maybe shortly after you left, who committed suicide. And they sort of looked at his brain, and had been severe trauma. This was a, you know, really high accomplished, you know, athlete, student athlete, and it was, you know, leading to rates of depression in folks. And this particular guy struggled and ultimately took his life. So there's a culture that has to be built around that sort of disregards yourself, that looks very military, that sort of is like, you are part of a team, you may die, but your brothers will continue. Like, so there's this like culture of self-sacrifice that is essentially beat into you over many, many years, and you have to willfully disregard those. And that is celebrated. you'll see like people playing through immense amounts of pain, you know, that kind of stuff is rewarded. There's also that the team is more spread out. This is embarrassing. I don't know. Is it 13 people on the field at one time?
No, I think it's 11.
Yeah. Okay. If I was playing, there would be 13 because I would run out of the field on the wrong time. so there's quite a number of people on, you know, so there's 22 people, right, for with both teams. If you switch this over to the NBA, you've got 5 players, right, on a team. And while it's really physically demanding, they're not beating into each other. We're not talking about, you know, concussions. So there's a couple different things where I think the prestige and the resources are not as spread out. The team is a smaller unit. The benches are really quite deep for a football team. You've also got like special teams that have certain roles that only come at certain points. So the power is really diffuse, and the rewards are really diffuse, and people are viewed as widgets in football. You know, one guy goes down, we'll just swap another guy, except for the QB.
I was about to get to that, because for me, and a lot of people compare it to chess, right? Football, because it's also, it has a lot of like different complex strategical moves that are pre-planned, and types of offense and defense. It's quite a clear correlation. The quarterback is like a king-like figure as well, right? So he's being protected by all the rest of the field. And it's interesting because if we tie it to this shift that's happening to these more, in a literal sense, more diverse quarterbacks that are coming up, they can not only throw as accurately and take decisions as perfectly, but they're also usually much quicker than these old white quarterbacks, much more agile, mobile. So if you compare it to chess, they're not only the king, they're sort of like king and queen combined, if you want, right? So, I mean, there's more diversity coming here in a very literal sense as well.
I also wonder if just like leadership styles will change, or if like the ability to have a shared background and trust among the leadership and the, you know, sort of like frontline guys, like there's got to be major impacts. And it does not make sense that it's pretty much just been white quarterbacks. It just doesn't pass the straight face test.
And talking about leadership, that brings me to the second Super Bowl that I watched live in my lifetime so far, because the kickoff time is usually around 1 a.m. or so in Germany, so I can't, especially since I have kids, I just can't stay up until then. But I did stay up, of course, for the Eagles versus the Patriots 3 years ago.
Yeah,
that was a great night. But there also, when we talk about leadership and Tom Brady, basically got outplayed, and that on that one particular night, magically, miraculously, by the backup quarterback Nick Foles of the Philadelphia Eagles, who just had a night of a lifetime. I think altogether it was like the greatest Super Bowl in terms of yards, passing yards, whatever. So it was an insanely fun game also to watch.
Yeah.
After the game, you know, the norm is that the losing quarterback meets the winning quarterback in the middle of the field, shakes his hand, says congratulations and all the best. That didn't happen that night for some reason. And of course, he tried to talk his way out of it afterwards. And he's pretty good at that. But the crazy thing is, he's done it again. Yeah. He's even done it again to Nick Foles this year.
Yeah.
So he sent it to the same guy who still hasn't, I mean, his career has never really lifted off. I mean, this was like the peak of his career back then. And Brady is still at the peak. So it's almost like he doesn't regard him as an equal or something. He walked off on him again and another guy. A bit of a toxic loser attitude.
Oh, I'm trying so hard not to make like lots of comparisons to politics, but yes, that does not surprise me. One other like small comparison, you know, one of the other really American games, right, is baseball. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like super interesting that in baseball, you've got our World Series is like seven games or best of seven. Mm-hmm. So there's this like replication of like, you know, do it, right? To get past like a one time, you just had a good game, but that's the exact opposite of football. Mm. Football has this sort of more war feel to it, where it's like, no, you don't get to like repeatedly engage. Like this is a major battle. Like this is the confrontation and the winner take all. And that's that does contrast with the slower moving baseball that also Americans love.
Yeah, this winner takes all. I mean, there you already have this great analogy to the political system as well, right?
Yes,
so it seems a lot of American society seems to be built around this dualism, right? This like, okay, either you win, and if you don't win, you lose. If you come in second, and that maybe is the same for track and field meeting as it is for the baseball World Series or the Super Bowl. If you come in second, for some people, you're the first loser. Like it doesn't really count as much. And that's not something that America has exclusive in the world. Of course, a lot of sports is modeled like that.
Yeah.
But it seems even more pronounced in different layers of society and sports there, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think there are different sports that like are more or less of an emphasis on that. And I would definitely say like football is the most friction packed and like tight, dense, like, you know, and then some of our other ones are much more spread out, and replications of like winning is really important. And you do like the baseball season is like what, 150, 160 games or something, like just crazy. And football season is what, like on the order of like 20?
I think the regular season, so they're thinking of expanding the regular season, I think, from 16 games currently to 17 games to have basically make more money. They already expanded the playoffs this year a little bit. And you know, of course, they're also struggling with COVID effects. There will be 22,000 spectators on Sunday.
In person.
Among them, 7,500 healthcare workers that the NFL has invited. So that sounds like a nice PR stunt.
It's a great way to spread COVID into the hospitals. It's a very effective way to do that, guys.
So apparently there are health protocols in place and distant seating from what I gathered. But of course, I think we can agree that it would be more healthy for the country if 22,000 people just stayed at home.
Yes, I think we can agree on that, yeah. The epidemiologist in me is cringing. Oh, man.
Show must go on, right? So that's, but I guess we agree that things have to move on somehow. But
I shouldn't leave it that way. Like it is, I think having this competition is really excellent, and I think it does build excitement. The group chats that I'm on, like, people are talking about it. Like, it's a really healthy, nice distraction from everything that's been going on. It's fun to, like, talk trash with friends about things that are at this level.
I want to circle back before we finished just to this awful acronym we started off with, the GOAT. And, you know, the greatest of all time, and there's always this discussion, who is the biggest athlete of the world? Yeah. And, of course, it has to be an American athlete. So it's, I don't know, who's in the mix? Tom Brady, mostly, MJ, I guess, Michael Jordan. Yep.
LeBron.
LeBron. But let's stay with Brady for the moment, because it's Super Bowl week. So growing up, I was very fascinated by Muhammad Ali. And so when I was growing up still in the 80s and 90s, there was no discussion who was the greatest. I mean, there was only one greatest. It was Ali.
Yeah.
And so I don't agree that Tom Brady should even be in this discussion.
Right.
And I think a lot of people will hate me for that. but for me, but let me, because we talked a little bit about the political aspect. And I hear people saying, yeah, I mean, he's an athlete. He doesn't have to care for all this stuff out there. He should only, you know, focus on his sport. Even Michael Jordan, you know, refused to endorse a Democratic senator. Right. You know, he was with his infamous quotes,
yeah.
Republicans buy sneakers too, and so forth. Well, you know, there was a sports athlete who risked everything, risked his own life, basically, risked being thrown to jail for 10 years and couldn't fight for 3.5 years. And actually also, I mean, this is maybe also the link to the sacrifice that you mentioned in football, who also continued too long and suffered from severe brain damage and Parkinson's syndrome. And that was Muhammad Ali. And I think if you know Ali's story and how he went absolutely against the mainstream, against the establishment, which was even more hateful at the time.
That's right.
Against racism as a black athlete. Yeah. How can Tom Brady even be in that discussion?
Yeah.
Isn't that an insult to the legacy of Muhammad Ali?
Well, I would even say to America, right? Like, you know, Muhammad Ali fought uphill battles, you know, and struggled and helped us figure out how to have dissent in positive ways. Right. Like, you know, that was a man who built himself up and sustained himself against overwhelming forces. And yeah, I mean, I'm going to undercut Brady here. Like, he's had the wind at his back by being supported by very financially well-backed teams over and over again. An amazing athlete, but getting surrounded by other people who will take some major hits for you and protect you. That's very different than the story of Muhammad Ali. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I will, you know, point to LeBron James is someone who really needs to be, like, thought about. And I think over the next 5-10 years, that's a person who may have a Muhammad Ali kind of influence on the United States. He's really been thinking and supporting a lot of political processes outside of, you know, the NBA. And even within the NBA has, you know, endorsed certain political moves inside of that. And so Muhammad Ali left a mark, and I think you're seeing some athletes pick that up now.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more people from a younger generation also to walk in these footsteps that are very large that Muhammad Ali left. And I think this is a good way to end this show.
Yeah.
You listen to The Americanist. Please do follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. And thank you so much for listening in. Enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday.
Take care. Good to see you, man.
Bye-bye.